Do you remember where you were on 9/11 or when the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded? What about COVID-19? Are there particular moments that stand out in your memory as signals that something momentous was happening, that life would never be the same? I certainly feel like I've got memories like that. And our next guest on Sunday Extra has been asking people what pandemic moment made the deepest impression on them and what we think we'll remember about COVID-19 years from now. And she's combined those responses with a fascinating excursion into the science of individual and collective memory for The Atlantic magazine. The piece is called You Won't Remember the Pandemic the Way You Think You Will. And it's by Melissa Faye Green, who you might remember we spoke to at some point in the pandemic haze of 2020 about her profound account of the fate of the orphans of Ceausescu's Romania, also for The Atlantic magazine. Melissa Faye Green, welcome back to Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julian. Happy to be here.
Melissa, you put the call out for people's abiding pandemic memories. What sort of responses did you get?
I did not get initially what I thought I was looking for. Mm. I was looking for anecdotes. I was looking for episodes. I'm a storyteller. I like to tell stories. I wanted people to tell me stories. But when I put the prompts on social media, I didn't explicitly say, give me a story. I said, what do you think you'll remember? And how do you think you'll talk about it? But I also reached out to some memory experts. And when they helped me sort through my responses, they said, well, this is typical. This is what we do. We remember in generalities far more often than we remember episodes. So the responses I got really reflected what memory experts have found, that when we remember, you know, our childhood, we might say, well, our uncle had a farm in Pennsylvania, and every Thanksgiving, we would all go to the farm and all the cousins would swim in the pond. But if someone were to say, tell me about one of those Thanksgivings, you'd say, gosh, I'm not sure I can.
Yeah.
And that's part of the way memory works. It's better at these generalities. And that's a lot of what I got from people about COVID, feelings of loneliness, feelings of fear, feelings of bereavement, but not so much single episodes. I got some, I got a few. Always you'll find a couple of people who can tell stories, and a couple in Denver responded with such vivid episodes that I ended up kind of structuring the story around their anecdotes.
Yes, that's Dr. Alex Inura and his wife, is that right?
Yes. The story that struck me was what Dr. Lynn Vander Wielen told me. She was in the last trimester of a much wanted and somewhat fragile pregnancy. Mm. It's a mixed race couple. Dr. Inura is biracial, a mother, a white Russian, and father, Nigerian. Lynn is white. She was very worried about the pregnancy. Alex became one of the first doctors at his hospital to accept and see and try to treat COVID patients. One of the questions I asked people was, what do you remember? And many people remembered the first thing that happened when they first realized things were going off the rails. Mm. For Alex, for Dr. Inura, he remembered that COVID patients started arriving before they were really ready for them. And he said when they started seeing patients then in their hospital in Denver, he felt like they were taking off in an airplane that hadn't been completely built yet.
Yes, that was a very memorable phrase, I must say.
Yes, he got sick and he secluded himself in their basement and then got very, very sick. And Lynn was cooking for him and leaving the food on the washing machine outside the basement bedroom, afraid to get close, not only afraid for herself, but afraid for their toddler and for the unborn child.
Yeah.
Alex realized he needed to go to the hospital. And one of the first things Lynn told me, which was so poignant, was the conversation she had with her beloved husband, a physician now terribly ill, through the closed basement door of which hospital to go to. He didn't automatically want to go to his own hospital because he knows what a burden it is when their own staff comes in, and to have one of their hospital, the staff physician, come in sick is so time consuming, and he didn't want to put that burden on his colleagues. But Lynn said her husband is a Black man who can't just walk into any hospital where he was just an anonymous African-American male coming in off the street.
Yes.
How well would he be treated? And so one of the things that struck me about their story. And of course, in the background is the murder of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter protests. And here they are in the most intimate space, trying to protect each other's lives and the lives of their children. And he can't just, she feels, check into any hospital in the city. She's afraid for him to do that. But he felt he would be in the best possible hands with his colleagues. So he did absolutely go to his own hospital, and his colleagues came to get him and picked him up personally. So he got outstanding treatment, but just the thought, it just seems like everything in the world is going to hell. Here's this loving young couple struggling not just with COVID-19, but with racism.
I'm interested, Melissa, in the research into human memories and how they work that you looked into. Could you tell us what the primacy effect and the recency effect are?
Yes, the primacy effect, what happened first. So although the majority of people I reached out to responded with generalities, those who responded with episodes typically told me about how they first knew. The boss came in, said, "We're evacuating, grab your laptops, get out of here." We all ran out into the street, and we've never been back. That kind of thing, what happened first. In fact, I began the story with what happened first for me was having to cancel a long-awaited trip to see our little grandson in Denver. My husband and I live in Atlanta. It's March 12th. It was right when the plague was descending. And the night the kids called from Denver and said, "Mom, it just doesn't feel safe." For me, that's when the plague years began. And I dragged my suitcase back upstairs, you know, and unpacked it, weeping. But my husband thought it was ridiculous. And he wanted to go on the trip. And he thought this was silly. One of our middle sons actually works at CDC. And my husband even thought he was being silly, because my husband really wanted to go on the trip. But the same day, the National Basketball Association canceled its entire season because a player tested positive. And that my husband took seriously and said, oh gosh, I guess this really is happening. So in effect, that's when his plague year began.
So two different primacies there in different memories. That's interesting.
Exactly. One little bit I had in the story was that to this day, as I was writing, I occasionally hear my husband on the phone in the next room and hear the syllables NBA. And I realize he's telling his origin story. He's telling how it started.
Yes.
The memory experts say this is a thing. It's the primacy effect. That's why, you know, every American remembers George Washington. I'm sorry, I don't know who the Australians remember in that context, but whoever the first.
Well, we're more likely to remember George Washington than Edmund Barton, who was our first prime minister. We're speaking with Melissa Fay Green about her article, "You Won't Remember the Pandemic the Way You Think You Will." Melissa, one piece of research that really stuck in my memory, perhaps only because of the recency effect, was a study into recall of the Challenger disaster, which in itself was quite challenging of how reliable our memories are. What was that research?
So a professor of psychology at Emory University, which happens to be three blocks from where I'm sitting, Ulrich Neisser, was the founder of the field of cognitive psychology. On January 29th, 1986, he distributed a brief questionnaire to his Psychology 101 undergraduates. The space shuttle Challenger had disintegrated in fire and smoke the day before. He asked 100-some undergraduates to write down how they got the news. Just how did you tell me every detail how you got the news of this tragedy yesterday? The undergrads did this and passed in their papers. 3.5 years later, as they were about to graduate, he tracked down about half of them and asked them the same questions again. Tell me in detail how you learned about the explosion. The results were really surprising. A quarter of the subjects, 25%, were wrong about everything they said. Wow. Zero. Half scored 2 or less on a 7-point scale. But all of them, even those who scored 0, felt entirely confident that they were remembering this momentous day with precision. The way the memory experts look at it is through the lens of collective memory. We unconsciously share our memories with one another and get little bits and pieces of confirmation or rebuttals from one another and spruce up our own memories to match those of other people, although we don't realize it.
So it's like we overwrite our memories by editing them as we go, and they get the earlier versions get wiped.
Exactly.
Melissa, there's one angle of your story that I can't resist going to, not least because one of the co-authors of a study from the University of Adelaide and Universities of Adelaide and Vermont is another previous Sunday Extra guest, the data scientist Peter Dodds. What did Peter and his big data crunching mates uncover about the sorts of stories that appeal to humans, and how does that apply to memories?
Years ago, many years ago, really at the dawn of computers, the great novelist Kurt Vonnegut would muse about the beauty of the shapes of stories, about how much he loved story shapes, how beautiful they were. He loved charting the Cinderella story, and he wished that stories could be fed into computers and so that their shapes could be charted. In 2016, data scientists at the University of Adelaide and the University of Vermont put almost 1,500 English language works of fiction through some kind of statistical computation of quote, sentiment analysis. They tracked the emotional valence of each story. Their data analytics revealed not thousands or hundreds or scores of shapes of stories. It revealed six, like thousands of works of literature assume one of six shapes. I can quickly tell you what they are.
Please
and
do.
We know all these stories. Rags to riches, you start in the bottom left and slope up to the upper right. That's rags to riches. Its opposite is riches to rags or tragedy. The arc starts at the upper left and slopes down to the lower right. The next pair, which have one emotional inflection point, the first is called Man in a Hole. You start out great, upper left, you fall down into the letter V, you're at the bottom, but you rise again. And so just picture the letter V. The opposite of that is an inverted letter V. You start out at the lower left, you rise, things look great, and then you plummet. And so it's an upside down letter V, and that's called Icarus, as you can well imagine. And then the third set have two emotional valence points. In one, you start out on top of the world, you fall, you rise again, you fall again. That's Oedipus. And then Kurt Vonnegut's favorite, you start out at the bottom, a little girl, her mother is dead, her father has married an evil, mean-tempered woman. This is how Vonnegut talks about it in his lecture. So starts out at the bottom, rises, falls, and rises again, and that's Cinderella. So wonderful, absolutely wonderful, marvelous research. The team at Emory University, the memory researchers led by Robin Fivish and Robert Thorstad, wondered if we put people's memories, their anecdotes, their own stories about their personal lives through similar statistical computation, will we get these same story arcs? Like, is that how we tell our own stories, or is that the realm of fiction? So they gathered thousands of personal stories. They got some online. They got some from students. They asked people two questions. What's the greatest thing that ever happened to you? What's the worst thing that ever happened to you? There was no clue that they wanted stories. They did not tell people, tell me a story. People could have told just a flat narrative. You know, on June 5th, this happened. On June 12th, this happened. You know, you could have just, it could have been flat, or they could have been any other kind of crazy shape. It could have been anything. And the marvelous thing was the same six story arcs emerged. We tell our own stories like this in these classic narrative arcs. Now, they've only done this research so far in English-speaking countries. Is this true on other continents?
So we don't know yet whether it's sort of universal across cultures, but that is fascinating.
Two more remarkable things. One was two kinds of story arcs were far more popular than the rest. The researchers had expected it to be rags to riches and tragedy. That's simple to tell. Things were great. Now they're screwed up, especially in a time of COVID, right? But the stories that people prefer, that we prefer, we like Man in a Hole and we like Icarus. We like one inflection point stories. And it was very clear, the data was very clear that that's the kind of stories we tell. And then if I can take you one step further, the most remarkable part of this already remarkable research is that we have a little bit of control here. It may be the only place that we have a little bit of control over our memory. And it's not to say we can turn that frown upside down into a happy smile or whatever that, that children's song was. It's not that it happens quickly or instantly, but we have a tiny bit of control in the shape of the arc we choose. So that if your life is feeling like Icarus, started out bad, thought I was doing great, then everything crashed and I've never been the same and it's ruined. If that's how things feel, it's possible you can look at those events through the lens of man in a whole. And if you can take a similar set of events and chart it in such a way that it started out well, then everything went to hell. But you know what? This is called the redemptive sequence. Either I learned something from that. Yes, we lost grandpa, but now we all grew closer. Whatever it is, if you can shape it as man in a whole rather than Icarus, over time, it actually helps make you a bit more resilient and a bit more prepared to handle whatever other crazy thing the universe throws at you.
All right. Well, it sounds, Melissa, like our pandemic memories are still in flux, still being shaped, but it's good to know that if, man or woman, if we're in a hole, we can find a story that gets us out of it. Thank you so much for joining us once again. That's Melissa Faye Green, American writer and inductee into the Georgia Writers Hall of Fame. And you can find more about the full breadth of Melissa's wonderful writing at melissafaygreen.com.